So today's Heart Talk is on accepting it is not personal. Accepting it is not personal. And I think this is a really key thing. How many of you, we already heard from one person, how many of you take things personal all the time? Right? It's so interesting. Because half the time when we're taking something personal, it's from somebody who we know doesn't know us. Right? Maybe they know us like for a few weeks, maybe even a couple years. But if you've lived a life, then they know you just a small percentage, but you're taking it personal. They don't know you. How can it be personal? That's kind of the first thought that comes to my mind when I think about this topic. By the way, I'm just going to start and see what comes through me. If there's any questions or comments, just raise your hand, and then we'll bring it into the conversation. Sound good? Cool. So we're looking at this idea of accepting that it is not personal. So maybe we have to define a few things here, not just what personal means, but also what acceptance means. Because that's a term that's thrown around a lot in our conscious communities, right? This term acceptance. You have a bad day and you tell your best friend, you're like, yeah, this happened and then that, and then I lost my job. And they're like, yeah, you got to accept it. You got to just accept it, be okay. You're like, what? Acceptance is used too often in this world as tolerance. That's not what acceptance is. That's tolerance, right? We're often thinking we have to just be okay with something, endure it, hope that maybe it'll change. The way that I like to define acceptance, a little bit different. It's just recognize the reality in this moment. That's it. Recognize it for what it is. You may like it, you may not like it. That part doesn't matter. Just recognize the reality. Because whether you like it or not, it's still the reality, right? And so often, because we don't want to accept that as the reality, we paint a story and interpretation and we start to get involved and invested in that. And that means we can't do anything about the reality because we're playing with a story. Does that make sense? I have a saying that we can invest in our clarity rather than our stories. Invest in clarity rather than story. Because too often, even if you have created a story and then you got identified to that story, you made it personal. Right? You created an identity out of it, and you're like, this is true, it's true for me, it's my truth. How many of you heard that one? Right? You got to own your truth, hold your truth, share your truth. Yes, but not in a stagnant way. Let your truth be malleable, let your truth be flexible to what the environment, to what you, what your own senses are moving with, because you're also changing in every moment. So often I see people who are so strongly identified into a certain way, that they say, this is my truth, it's who I am, it's how I am, it's how I'll always be. And yet we know that you're different right now than you are when you were a child, right? When you were a little baby, you probably looked different physically, I would hope. Otherwise, you'd be really weirding out your parents. It's like a little adult, right? You probably changed in your mindset and your emotions and the way that you deal in the world, the skills that you have. That means we're always changing. So then why is it that there's certain pieces of our identity, things that we talk about as being our personality, that we're like, no, that doesn't change. That's how it is. And often we fight for it when it's something that's actually not benefiting us. That's an interesting one. It's very rare when I have clients come to me that they come, they're like, yeah, I've got this issue I'm really challenged with. I'm such a nice guy. I'm a great person. I'm succeeding in life and I don't know what to do about it. Right? People aren't working with their great qualities. It's the things that they're judging about themselves, that they're trying to figure out, how do I work with this? But in that, they have already made the decision, that's who they are. The self-judgments, the flaws, the things that they're looking at, and they're going, no, that's who I am, I can't change those. These other things could change though. I'm really good right now, but what if I could turn bad? I'm really athletic, or what if I got weak? I'm really this, what if this happens? We're so afraid that our good qualities will just be out of our control and we'll lose them. But our bad qualities, things, and when I say bad qualities, it's just the ones you're judging. You don't have good or bad qualities. You have qualities. That's it. But the ones you're judging about yourself, you're sitting there being like, yeah, I can't do anything about those. That's identity, right? We got stuck on something. I like to picture identity as being kind of like, so almost like you took a cup and you started to pour some water into it or some liquid, whatever form you want. And that liquid was the experiences of your life. It's the different things that you're conditioned in, that you're influenced by, things you've been told, things that you learned, that you experienced yourself. And you're filling this cup, and you're filling this cup. And at some point, you start looking into the cup, and you're like, well, this was a good experience, that was a bad experience, and oh, I like these. Okay, I'm going to hold on to this. It was consistent enough that it was happening the same way. Okay, this is who I am. And as soon as you did that and you attached to it, it's almost like you froze the liquid. And in freezing the liquid, all of a sudden you had this attachment, right? This frozen block of ice. And there's nothing wrong with that, but the problem is that you forgot that it was inside of a cup. And I like to think of the vessel, the cup, as the potential for anything. It's your ability to choose the direction of your life. But if you get stuck thinking that who you are personally is the identified attachment of this block of ice, then you've got a little bit of an issue. Because what happens to a block of ice when you take it out and you put it out in the sun? It melts. And this, I think, is what's happening to so many of us. That the sun is every single other influence, expectation, opinion, thought, comparison that's happening all around us. It's like little sun rays warming that, and it's causing your identity to melt away and also shift and change because you're being influenced in different ways. Or maybe you're seeing something you wish you could be more like or seeing something you wish you weren't so much like. And that ice starts to melt, but here's the problem. You forgot the cup was there. And in forgetting that, you start to panic because you're like, I'm melting away, I'm going to stop existing. This is the crux of identity. Is the moment you become attached to a identity. That was not grammatical. An identity. Listen, I'm like, oh, that's not right. As soon as you're stuck with that, then that means that you are on a downward slope. You're starting to lose yourself instead of build yourself, grow, right? You look at nature, everything is always growing. And if it's not growing, what's it doing? Yeah. So isn't it interesting that we're all afraid of growth quite often? We say, I want to grow, I want to grow. What, I have to change something? No. I don't want to. I'll just stay same, exactly how I am. But nothing stays the same. When it's resisting the growth of life, what it's really doing is it's deteriorating, which is death. And so to allow for change, to allow yourself to actually grow, that the personality gets to be a ongoing dynamic quality. I like that. What if who you are was an ongoing dynamic balance between your values, your truths in that moment, and your environment and the people in that environment? Instead of it being a static, this is who I am. What if it was a question, who do I want to be today, instead of who am I supposed to be? So that starts to get us a little bit into what personal means, right? Because even that, when we take something personal, who's taking it personal? What is this personality? Who is the identity that's being offended? Share something with you guys. How many of you have done any shadow work? Or know what shadow work is? Or shadow work, you're looking at the self-judgments, the pieces of yourself you don't want to look at, the things you put in the shadow. And you start to work with it. You reveal it into the light of day, and you're like, ooh. I read a book a while back called The Dark Side of the Light Chasers by Debbie Ford. This is several years ago. And in it, it's a lot of shadow work. And I remember there was this piece, and it was talking about, like, choose a quality that you're not so proud of, but you know it's sometimes you have, and own it. Just own it. So I was like, okay, sometimes I can be selfish. Sometimes. And there's always a justification of why, but I'm like, yeah, sometimes I can be selfish. And so I thought, okay, I'm going to own this. I'm going to own sometimes I'm selfish. And then as I did, I was like, oh, I feel free now. This is wonderful. I can be selfish, I can't be selfish, it doesn't matter, I'm okay now. And I walked over and I went to a cafe and I ordered myself a cake. I was so happy with myself. And I'm eating my double chocolate pie, by the way, amazing cake at Sayuri's Cafe. And I'm sitting there, I'm eating it, and I'm down to my last bite, and a friend of mine was walking in, and I know this friend, they always want to share the cake. And I saw them, and they walked in and they saw the cake, they looked at me, we made eye contact, and I was like, ate the last piece, quick as I could. Friend comes over, sits down, is like, well, that was selfish. I'm like, no, it wasn't. I dealt with that. I don't have that anymore. Let's be honest, right? Here's the problem. We look at qualities of how we are in personality, and then we attach it to who we are. But the fact is that the thing that we were judging was never who we are, because that was changing all the time. We were judging our choice of behavior in that moment. And that also means we were judging the quality of the choice. So selfish. If you can take away the charge of being selfish at all, not just in terms of who is being selfish, then you can really deal with your shadows, right? But if you're trying to deal with it of myself being something, personally, Well, it's very difficult because it's like the Zen koan of, you know, sticking your foot in a river, and then the, you know, Zen master's like, stick your foot in the same river, and you're like, aha, no, oh, it's not the same river. The river you put your foot in went downstream already. Right? You are changing in every single moment, which means that if you're trying to be like, oh, look, I'm not selfish anymore. Well, that person that wasn't selfish anymore went downstream. There's a new selfish person in every single moment. And so instead, we get to look at what is the actual activity, behavior, habit, quality, emotion, whatever it is, action that we're judging. And can we start to look at that with a neutrality? And then use that in reference to who do we want to be and start to work from there. Right? Instead of having a personality, make things intentional and purposeful. Choose wisely, choose intentionally what it is that you want in life. And how you want to be in life, and also how you want to respond. Which brings us again to accepting it's not personal. Because the thing that's happening is often something's occurred and you thought, they did that to me. It's a simple example that's always used of you're on the highway and somebody cuts in front of you. And the rest of the day you're like, I can't believe that a-hole, they just cut right in front of me. How could they do that to me? They didn't even know you. They didn't notice you probably. But you spent the rest of the day dedicated and invested in taking something personal, making a story and getting stuck on it. When we accept something as reality, let's say, for instance, a friend, a longtime friend, has suddenly betrayed you, right? Done something that you feel was against you. Anybody had that happen before? So in that moment, this is somebody that you've known for a while. It's obviously going to hurt more that something's occurred. And if you're trying to accept it as, well, okay, I just have to accept that they did that and, you know, maybe they had the reasons, that's trying to justify and tolerate the situation. That's not what I'm saying when I say acceptance. Acceptance is just recognize what the reality is. And the reality, if you were like a security camera watching the situation, is here you are, here's your friend made an action, had nothing to do with you, had to do with their choice. Now, you may have wanted to be considered. You may be hurt because you weren't considered. You may be hurt because maybe you were considering it was done intentionally. But it was still, from a security camera view, objective. The reality is simply, they did something. Now you can choose how it affects you. And emotionally, it probably will affect you. It's going to hurt. But if you don't get it in that it wasn't about you, that's the key, right? Now I'm going to go a little bit deeper in this. I like to say to my clients all the time when they're sharing stuff where they really feel betrayed or different things have happened and they're taking it very personal. I go, so you think that person got up that morning and was like, you know what? Today I'm going to really mess with Rodolfo. I'm going to mess up his day. I'm going to make him feel real bad today. That's my goal for the day. I don't think anybody does that, right? Unless it's already been built up and all this pent up bitterness and resentment and other things came up. But again, it wasn't against you. It was against their own bitterness and resentment and equality of that, right? So, at first, it doesn't mean that you just write something off, right? I'm not saying accept and forgive. That might take some time. But the acceptance is first to recognize the reality, which is that it wasn't about you, it involved you. There's a difference. The first step is to accept that it wasn't about you so that you can look at from an objective view, right? But you're very correct. If you bypass it, that's a totally different thing. If you're like, well, actually, I see people do this more in the reverse way. Maybe you invite somebody to a party, and they say, yeah, I'm totally going to be there, and you make sure there's like a dinner arrangement for them, and you set a seat for them, you told all the people they're coming, and then they don't show up. And you think, well, shoot, like they didn't respect their commitment to me, this and that, whatever you want to say, right? And you go to them, and you're thinking to yourself, well, and maybe you even confront them. You say, why didn't you show up? You know, I took that personal. You have made a personal commitment to me, blah, blah, blah. Now, where a lot of people will bypass, and I see this a lot in these kind of conscious communities, they'll be like, yeah, well, my truth wasn't saying it in that moment, and I felt like I should be, you know, in the fields doing something else. I don't know, right? There is an accountability that we all get to have, right? And in that accountability, we get to communicate. And if we don't communicate, we still are accountable when confronted. So there's a difference between bypassing it, letting it go, forgiving in that way, and actually finding clarity. And that's why I was mentioning earlier, So often we get stuck in our story based on identity and having taken something personal against that identity that we never get the clarity to find out what really happened. We don't even open the doors for the possibility of that kind of communication. And so the first step is to accept, notice and recognize the reality that it wasn't personal, but it had many other variables. Again, you might have been one of them, but you weren't the only one. There was the variables of that person's conditioning and history and traumas and reasons and fears and insecurities. There was the condition of maybe external forces and other things, right? We never know. And we won't find out unless we get out of our own headspace of having taken it personal, approach and be like, hey, so what happened? But notice the difference. If you come and you've let go of the charge, you've let go of having taken it personal, and you come and say, what happened? There's an opening. They can communicate. But if you come, why didn't you show up? What would? Oh, they're not going to respond well, right? This is the thing. When we take it personal, we create a charge, a very strong charge, and then that comes as an attack to the other person. Yes. Ooh, she just said named two big ones that I think cause us to take things personal. Expectations and then being disappointed by it, right? Expectations and being disappointed by it. I have a question for you guys. How many times have you been disappointed by an expectation that you never communicated that you had the expectation? Right? Right? We're all like, I can't believe they didn't know that I wanted that. What, did you tell them? No. Why are you upset? Now, if you communicated it to them and they obviously didn't hear, because this happens a lot too, right? You'd be like, three rooms over, like maybe if I'm telling Christina something, Christina, can you make sure that you bring something that's blah, blah, blah home later? And I hear no response. Yeah, she heard it. She must have heard it. I'm going to expect that she heard it. Ooh, I'm going to be in trouble later, right? You need to make sure there's actual communication, not monologue, right? Communication means that two people join forces to find clarity about something. I'm going to say that again. Communication means that two people join forces to find clarity about something. Communication is not just that you told someone something. I think a lot of times that's what we think it is. Yeah, but I told you. We also have different interpretations of words and tonality and all sorts of different things, right? We read body language often more than we do the words. You could say something and the person's body language is telling you something totally different. Or you're interpreting it different because of your own histories. So communication has to be a joint effort. You're both talking and finding clarity together about something. You know, when you really do get into these kind of conversations, you have to take personal accountability. And personal accountability sometimes is uncomfortable, right? You have to actually account for your actions and choices. But sometimes if those actions and choices didn't give you the result that you were hoping for, or even backfired and gave you results you really didn't want, you don't want to own them. You wouldn't be like, oh no, I did that because I had to, or somebody else told me, or whatever reason. But as you just said, that actually disempowers you. Because the moment you say, this happened because someone else or some other external force, you just took away the power for you to make it different, to choose differently. And again, we go back a little bit to this idea of a personality that's identified and attached and stagnant. Because this is what I actually see people do all the time, is they don't realize that their history, because I know all of us in this room probably have different things in our history. Some will be good, some will be bad. Some will be really bad. And we're carrying all of that with us, right? And as we carry that, every time something occurs, we tend to put on a little bit of armor or some like accoutrement or tool to be like, okay, I know how to handle it this way. I can do it this way. Oh, that didn't work out so well there. Okay, I'm going to do it like this. And we're carrying all these things. And by the time we're in our present day, we're like trying to get by. And we've been taught something that I think is a total lie. And it's that your history makes you who you are. That is a lie. Your history brought you to where you are. Your choices were to keep carrying it. How many of you, just a moment, how many of you traveling here to Bali, when you were checking your luggage, when you were coming through the airport, and maybe some of you had to pay some extra luggage, right? Because you were like, oh, maybe I need this, maybe I need that, and you did a few different things, and you were pissed off how much they charged you, because it's expensive, right? And you're going along, and then you get here, and for the three suitcases that you brought, all you've been wearing is yoga clothes and a sarong, And you're like, why did I bring all this stuff? Same thing with your history. Why are you carrying it? Because you're identified to the personality of those experiences. You're identified to the things. And we go back to this idea even of forgiving and moving forward from something that's occurred. So often we are so stuck on, yeah, but they did that to me. And until I find out why they did it to me or how I can do it back to them or whatever I need to do to feel clear, I have to hold on to it. Meanwhile, they're off doing their own life and they're happy. And you're carrying it. We have a weird pattern as human beings that we carry stuff. Right? You look at an animal has some traumatic experience. Maybe it's walking across the street and somebody honks at it and it's like, whoop, right? The first thing it does, it gets to safety. So it gets across the street. It doesn't sit there and be like, what happened? Right? We kind of do that sometimes. We're like stunned. But it gets to safety first, and then it does a really important thing. It goes like this. Right? Shakes it off. We don't do that as human beings. Human beings, we're walking along, we stub our toe. Inanimate piece of furniture. Put it right here. Save it for later so that I know that furniture did that to me. Stupid furniture did it to me personally. Put itself there. This is what we're doing when we're taking things personal. We tend to focus on what we want to avoid instead of what we want. Right? We tend to focus on what we want to avoid instead of what we want in life. And it's not your fault. Like, we biologically, we've evolved for this. In order to survive, our senses had to look for the things that were dangerous, threatening to us, and what to avoid, right? You know, your caveman walked out, saw a saber-toothed tiger, was like, oh, okay, got to avoid that. But they didn't do the same thing when they walked out and saw, like, a butterfly. They're like, oh, butterfly, note it, make sure you know where it's at. No, they're like, oh, a butterfly, okay. They're like, oh, saber-toothed tiger, right? And so we evolved to be watching for the things to avoid, and we got in a pattern of that. But we live in a day and age now, and I can say this with some certainty because all of you are here in Bali, Indonesia, on some form of vacation, or you're living here, in a room, having a heart talk with a guy you've never met before, and talking about spiritual philosophies. That tells me you're probably safe in terms of your basic needs. Which means you don't have to be focused on saber-toothed tiger right now. You don't need to be focused on what to avoid. You can actually start to reorient yourself away from that which you're avoiding towards that which you desire, what you want in life. The other big lie we've been told about our history is that we have to remember it so we learn from it and don't make the same mistakes. But the problem is what we are focused on, regardless whether it's what we're avoiding, our past, our future, whatever it is, whatever we focus on, we are telling our brain, that's significant, keep an eye out for it. That's what we're telling, right? And your brain is there to help you survive. And so if you tell it, this thing is significant, and you're focused on what you're avoiding, you're like, that, you know, avoid caterpillars, right? Avoid all caterpillars. And your brain's like, okay, avoid all caterpillars. Very significant to our survival. And so what's it going to do? It's going to be looking. Caterpillars everywhere. Caterpillars. And you're bumping into people, and you're like, excuse me. Excuse me. Who put that plant there? Like, excuse me. Because you're so focused on just the caterpillar, your brain actually starts to filter out everything else. And all of a sudden, it seems like nothing in the world is there except the things you don't want. Which is why we have the misconstrued belief that if you focus on what, if you forget your history, then you're going to run into it. It's actually the other way around. If you're focused and obsessed about your history, you're going to recreate it. So instead, we can start to shift and move towards what we want, meaning our focus, right? We actually shift our focus. Now, this can be somewhat difficult because you are fighting the biological need to survive. Because you'll be like, okay, no, I don't need to be, let's say it's a bad relationship. You came out of a terrible relationship and now you're afraid of going into a new one. It doesn't have to even be romantic. It could be a friendship, right? And as you're trying to enter that new one, you're like, yeah, but that last time, that really hurt me and I don't want that to happen again. Okay. But what are you going to do then? If you're focused on what happened the last time, you're going to be looking for those qualities. You're going to look and sometimes even create them in the new relationship. What if instead you focus on what you really wanted and then you cultivated that in the new relationship? Notice what I just said. You cultivate it. Not that you just expect it without telling them and then you're disappointed. No, don't do that, right? You don't just expect it. You cultivate it, which means you first communicate. Maybe this new friend and you're like, hey, you know what I really enjoy from friendship is loyalty and reliability and that I have somebody I can talk to when I need somebody really there to talk to. They're like, me too. That's amazing. Okay, great. Now together you have some clarity and you start cultivating actually doing that. Right. And this is how we shift our focus from what we don't want towards what we do want. First, we figure out what it is, right? What do you want in life? This is a tricky question. I ask my clients this all the time. I ask myself this all the time. Christina and I ask each other this all the time. What do you want? And it's tricky because I think a lot of us, and I hear this from people all the time, it goes back to this avoidance. What most people will answer, they'll be like, well, I don't know. I don't want to suffer. And I don't want to be unhappy, and I don't want to be poor or sick or all these other things, and I don't want to struggle. I'm like, okay, that's what you don't want. What do you want? Oh, what do I want? Nobody's asked me that before. The brain's going like, I've been so focused on what we're avoiding. This is a whole other department. I got to send a memo. I don't know what I want. And then it sends the memo, and the memo comes back blank, and it's like these words that say, not applicable. Sends it back. And then people will answer me. They'll be like, I don't know. I don't know what I want. And I say, BS. Belief system. You know what you want. And I know because you wouldn't be disappointed when you don't get it. We all know what we want. Chocolate cake comes in the room. People are like, I know what I want. Right? We know what we want. Here's the problem. We may not recognize we have permission to have it. I share this in almost every single one of my heart talks because I think it's so important. So often we think we don't know what we want, but the truth is we just haven't given ourselves permission to have what we want. So maybe the better question is, what would you like to give yourself permission to have? What would you like to give yourself permission to have? And maybe part of that is peace of mind, which means that you wouldn't be taking things personal when things happen in life and maybe sometimes in life around you. I can imagine, especially as a public speaker and anybody else who facilitates groups and is in front of people, that, you know, if I looked around and somebody was yawning or somebody, you know, got up because they had something else they wanted to go do, if I took things personal, whew, it would crush me every day. But what I'm doing instead and what I invite all of you to do is don't take it personal, make it personal. There's a difference, and it's kind of what you were saying, right? Don't take it personal as if they did something to you. Make it personal as what do I want to do about it for myself. There's that self-accountability again. And self-responsibility. I like actually both of those words because what it is, if you look at responsibility, right? Even I say the word, most people are like, ooh, right? It's like, makes you cringe a little bit for some reason. It's got a negative connotation. But if you break the word apart, responsibility is the ability to respond. Responsibility is the ability to respond. That's a wonderful, empowering quality. When you know you have the capacity in any moment, no matter what circumstance, no matter what situation, no matter what other people are doing, that you have an ability to respond through your own choice, not react through some conditioned choice or pattern. Now, some of you already are like, damn it, I'm all conditioned. I got all these patterns. I just react, right? How many of you have that? There's certain things that just push your buttons in. You're just like, right? You want to know why? Because you took it personal. The only time, just a moment, the only time that we react strongly is when our nervous system is like, this is life or death. They did something and I'm going to die if I don't do something about it. I need to let them know. Right? But most of the time, it's not life or death. Because if it really was, you wouldn't be busy trying to figure out how to react. You would have already moved out of the danger. It's like you're standing in the middle of the road, semi-truck's coming, you're not like, well, I'm going to tell that semi-truck. I'm going to tell them, no, you're like, get out of the way. You know, is a way of measuring whether you're taking it personal or not, whether there's no charge, right? Yeah. And when you know that there's no charge, is because it's not something that you're actually insecure about with yourself, right? So, for instance, tell me your name again.
Nayila.
Right? Okay, hold on to it. So, if I say, your name's not Nayila, it's Jane. Right? Okay? Your name is Jane. Do you have a charge to that? Or you're like, well, it's just not true, so... Exactly. You're not going to react to it. You're not going to take that personal. You'd be like, that guy's, woohoo, thinks my name is Jane. Right? But it's not personal, because you're like, I know who I am.
Yeah.
How many of you know who you are? Or have chosen to be? Yeah, everybody's like, oh, come a half step, like maybe a little bit. Right? And that's the thing. Most of us are still trying to figure that out. We're trying to figure out who we are. So when somebody comes along and gives us input, influence, opinion, perspective that doesn't quite jive with who we want to be, we get really reactive. But were they doing that to you personally? No, because you don't even know who you are, so they definitely don't know. But they're trying to guess to it. So the beauty is, and this is another invitation I'll give you and then I'll come back to you, is what would happen if you were choosing who you wanted to be? If you truly said, you know what, I'm going to ask the question, who do I want to be? And you say, I want to be a strong, confident, amazing, you know, powerful, positive person. Okay, great, go do it. Just do it. Be that because you have the choice to do it, right? And in moments where you're not feeling that totally, okay, acknowledge that and then go cultivate more of what you want. Again, I'm using the word cultivate because otherwise you're just going to bypass. You'll be like, I feel really meek, but I'm going to act like I'm strong. No, don't do that. Don't fake it. Be it, meaning cultivate it, develop it, create it for yourself. And when you do that, then you can be 100% sure of who you are. Somebody else comes along, says something to you, and it doesn't align, you don't have a charge. Because you don't need to protect against it, you don't need to defend, because you're 100% sure and certain. We only defend and get protective and charged up when we're not 100% sure and we're worried about what they're thinking or somebody else might be thinking. But if you know who you are, there's no reason to need to prove yourself otherwise. We have these underlying, I'm going to call them consistencies in our brain, right? We have these synapses that over time they've been bridging and bridging and bridging. And after a while, they're just like, you know what, let's stop separating out. We'll just hold the hands and we'll stay together, right? This is what the neurons are doing. And because it's more efficient. And the brain wants to be efficient to help you survive even better. But the problem is that maybe those patterns weren't really beneficial patterns. Or maybe those patterns were from external influences telling you how they thought you should be instead of how you want to be. And eventually, you have this pattern stuck, and you can't get out of it because it's this neural pathway that's actually quite solidified. This is the subconscious. Because you don't have to think about it, it just happens subconsciously, right? You start making choices subconsciously because it's just already there. What we can do, though, first is actually creating an openness again to our minds. When we talk about a growth mindset or an open mindset, that's really what we're saying. We're saying, go along and go to those little neurons and be like, it's okay. You should open up a little, expand, right? And as you do that, which you can only do that when you feel safe, right? As you find safety, in that safety, a natural thing happens in everything in nature. When it's safe, it goes like this, right? It opens. And then as soon as it opens, now you can start to direct it. You can start to program intentionally your subconscious mind. Right? And that's what I mean by bring your focus to what you want. And you're going to start telling your mind, okay, let's say it's you want to make $1 million. Okay, great. Go make $1. Okay, you made $1. Synapse did a little action. Go make another dollar, did another action. Go make $10, did another action. You get up to your $1,000, it's like, hey, we're doing the same thing to make this money. Let's just, oh, now it's automatic and subconscious. See how we can shift our mindsets? How do we actually go from having a charge? Because maybe we already took it personal, right? And even, and this is the funny thing, we can go snowball effect, right? We'll take it personal and then you'll be like, but Rodolfo said not to take it personal. Shoot, I already did. Oh, I hate myself. Oh, now you made an even bigger charge, right? So the first step, you pause. Take a step back and just be like, okay, what's happening here? And start, try to look at it objectively. You may have already reacted. Okay, you reacted. Still look at that objectively. Don't judge yourself for the reaction. Be gentle with yourself. In the pause is where you're going to be able to start to look at it. But if you try to just react, respond, go quickly, in haste, you're acting out of survival. The only time we're running, rushing is, again, we're in avoidance of something we think is dangerous. So then that actually brings me to how do we make that pause? Find safety. It's the example I shared with the dog. First step it does, it gets to the other side of the street. It makes sure it's safe, right? We have built in adrenaline for a reason, right? And funny enough, again, stuff will trigger us that isn't really life or death, but when it triggers us, our nervous system is like, danger, threat, adrenaline, and then you're like, ah, and you go aggro on somebody, right? This is your built-in survival reflex. First step, check in. Wait. Is them saying that they didn't like my shoes, was that really a life or death thing? Probably not. And you can relax, calm down. You go out of this amygdala, little part of the reptilian part of the brain, right? And that piece, all it knows is fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. It only has like four or a few more maybe tools to help you survive. But it doesn't have logic. It doesn't have rationale. It doesn't have creative thinking or problem solving. It just knows how to react. And so what you need to do is actually get out of that. Now, some really practical ways to do that. Take a deep breath. That takes you into a different part of your system, right? Respiratory. Move. Start walking. This is why people pace when they get really angry. They're like, I'm tired. Right? No. They pace because it gets them into the motor cortex. Moves them out of it. I'm going to give you one more. This is a magical tool that my wife and I came up with. Actually, I give her full credit because she did it to me one day when I was losing my, right? And we call it the magic pineapple. The magic pineapple. Now this, brilliance. So one day over breakfast, and I have pineapple sometimes in my oatmeal, actually every morning. And I don't know what it was, but I had gotten really upset about something, and I was like really frustrated and all this stuff, and Christina's trying to help me to calm me down, and nothing's working because I wasn't in my right mind. I was in the amygdala, and I was in survival and all these things. And all of a sudden, she looks at me, and she picks out one of the pineapples from my oatmeal. She's like, do you want me to give you a magic pineapple? Mm-hmm. And here's the thing. The conscious adult part of me, the one that was frustrated, was like, it's not a magic pineapple, it's just a pineapple. But the inner child was like, shh. Talking about magic pineapple. I want to know where she's going with this. The inner child, which is the subconscious, more powerful than the conscious. And so no matter how much I was like thinking, this is silly, it's just a pineapple. Inner child, subconscious, like, shh. Forget all that stuff we were upset about. I want to know what this magic pineapple is about. So this is an amazing trick you can use with yourself. Literally, use any object you want. Make it a pen or something that you carry around with you yourself or your keys. Just ask yourself, next time you're really upset, just be like, let me get my magic keys. Your conscious adult mind will be like, this is ridiculous. Your inner child will be like, shh, we have magic keys in our hands. What are we going to do with it? It's a way of moving from what part of brain that you're in. Right? That's the key. That is the quickest physiological way to shift out of a reactive, charged place. The worst way to do it is to combat that charged place. That includes not just to yourself, but other people trying to help you, right? Does it ever help you when you're really upset and somebody's like, don't be upset, you don't need to be upset. You're like, you won't tell me what I'm doing, right? Never works, because they're talking to the rational part of your mind. You're irrational in that moment. What you need to do is actually get out of that part of your mind. Another way that you can do this is called a pattern interrupt, right? Which is, that's also what the magic pineapple is. If you've studied any Tony Robbins or NLP, you know what pattern interrupt means. It means simply do something that's so incredibly out of context that the brain gets confused and it's like, wait, what? I'm going to share a little story about when Christina first discovered pattern interrupts. She was reading a Tony Robbins book and she learned about what this was. She's like, oh, that's so powerful. Like you can shift somebody's mood. And like if they're really angry, you can just like shift them out of it. So what did she do for the next week? She kept trying to make me angry. Because she wanted to test it. And it wasn't working because I was like, what? No. Okay, sure, yeah, go ahead and do that. She's like, no, you're supposed to be angry. So there are actually many tools to help us with this kind of stuff, right? The first one is just be aware. Be aware, and this is, we're going to come back to a second. We're going to come back to not taking it personal. Be aware that the reaction, the charge, everything that's going on, it's not you. It's not about you. It's not because of you. It's just affecting you. By doing that, now you can actually step away from it, find safety, and look at it objectively. We're affected by the people around us, right? And so one of the things that we have as a precept to any relationship is the willingness to grow, right? The willingness that things will change. And if you're not willing and you're stuck in any identity, then you're going to have this butting of heads. So let's say this first person you were talking about, that they're triggering you all the time. If there was the ability to go and talk to them, communicate, not tell them, right? Difference. If you go and you're triggering me all the time, you're going to argue. But if you go and you say, hey, I'm feeling triggered all the time. Can we talk about it? Because I'd like to see what's going on. See, that's communication. You invite for clarity. And then maybe you talk about it. But maybe this person's like, what's your problem? What do I have to deal with it? I don't need to change. I'm good the way I am. It's your problem. Okay. That is the measurement. If somebody in your life who's not benefiting and even maybe causing despair and suffering and issues for you, challenge for you, isn't willing to meet you in finding clarity, then yeah, you want to create some space there. But what you don't want to do is carry that charge with you into all relationships. Because that's the thing, is it's always similar to those bridges in our own neurology. What's really happening is in a relationship, there's a bridge of energy happening, right? There's a dynamic that's going on. And that dynamic will be their conditioning and your conditioning and whether they align or not in that moment. What you can do is if you can communicate and create a safe container to communicate in, you take away all the charge and you say, we're just going to look objectively at our triggers and our conditioning. And then we're going to decide if that's what we want to continue to live with. Most of the time, what we're doing is we're just escaping, which is why we escape, but we haven't actually dealt with the charge. We haven't dealt with the fear that's in there, right? Because I can guarantee that the reasons you get triggered is because something in you feels threatened. Something feels unsafe. So instead of continually trying to just find out, okay, well, what's the benchmark of how unsafe I have to feel before I leave, right? At the moment you feel unsafe, communicate it, share, and hopefully that partner, that person, is open to the willingness to change and find clarity so that you both can always feel safe. The point is always the willingness to grow, and then our second precept is communication. That you have the willingness to grow and the willingness to communicate, and then the power of choice is actually the third thing we always talk about in relationships. The power of choice is to give yourself the choice and them the choice whether to be there instead of to be obligated, expected, or be there because they're avoiding not being there, right? There's always these differences. And that creates real commitment. So yeah, it's a tricky thing to actually tell people that yes, if there's not a willingness to grow and you're butting heads and it's causing a decline in the relationship and in your own health and you know sense of happiness in life, yeah, you're going to have to call it at some point and say, for my safety. And that's actually the key measurement. Do you feel safe or do you not? Can you create the safety? If you cannot create the safety because others in that scenario aren't allowing for it, get out of the scenario. Find the safety and then figure it out. But don't try to do it from the place of danger. Does that make sense? And when I say danger, it doesn't mean you have to be in a domestic violence situation. It's simply if your nervous system is contracting, that's danger. You need to step out of it. I'll share this in a more practical way in relationship where you don't have to like leave the whole relationship. A lot of times you have different dynamics in relationship. You have avoidant, anxious styles and different things like this, right? The anxious style wants resolution immediately. So when somebody is in an argument in that, they're like, yeah, but let's just, I want to know what you're talking about right now. And the other person's avoiding and they're putting up with a wall and they're just withdrawing, right? Neither one of you is going to get anywhere because neither one feels safe. What you can do is hopefully one of the two honors the other person's need for safety. And let's say that the avoidant style goes, look, I'm overwhelmed right now. I can't think and I can't communicate effectively. Can we come back to this in an hour? Can we come back to this tomorrow morning, right? And step out of it, because in that moment, you're not safe, you're not going to respond well, it's just going to get worse. But notice what I included in that. A promise of when it's going to be resolved. That's the key. Because if you just go, I can't handle this, I'm overwhelmed, like I don't want to talk anymore. The anxious person's going to get way more anxious. Because they're left being like, oh, it's unresolved, ah! Right? But if they're told, look, hey, in an hour, we can sit down again. Or tomorrow morning, we can sit down again. Okay, thank you. One way, right? That's communication. So we have all these, again, tools to work with this. But I think the key in first not taking something personal is to feel that safety. When you have that safety, then you're not in a reactive state of survival. And that's the only reason that we're taking things personal, is because it's mattering to our survival. But if we realize that not everything is our survival, most things are just our desires, how we want to be feeling and doing and interacting in the world, but it doesn't really have a life or death component to it. When we realize that, then we can take a step back and pause. We can look at it objectively, and then we can communicate about it in a safe container with the willingness to grow, to see what's really going on. And then from that clarity of communication, you take steps forward. And in that, you start cultivating, and you cultivate those new neural synapses and bridges of what you really want in life. Today, we're talking about accepting it is not personal, and the first step is to realize acceptance is about recognizing the reality for what it is, not for how your identity was taking it. When you recognize that, and you start to depersonalize the effects of something, you take the charge away. You take the charge away, you start to step into it from a clarity and a place of actual responsibility. the ability to respond to it and see what's really going on. And if it involves other people, also the ability to ask for the safety to communicate about it and then maybe find some new clarity. And as you do that, then all of a sudden it's not so hard to accept because it was never personal, it just involved you. Great, if it involves you, be engaged in it with accountability and responsibility. Thank you, everybody.